bunch of losers you are. You didn't expect me to say that, I suppose. But I didn't mean it in that way. After all, it is a deep insult in America to tell someone that they are a loser. We like and honor winners, and that feeds the denial that we have that loss happens not very often and usually to someone else. My intent today is to brush the word loser off a little bit, to bring it out of the trash bin of you and your sorrows don't matter to me or I am not like you, and reclaim it. Place it on the altar of tell me about your pain, and in that telling, in that receiving, we will discover that which binds us deeply together. So we're all a bunch of losers here. And that is our saving grace as human beings. We are all connected in our experience of loss. Just at the moment when we feel the pain of separation from the one we love, or the place we love, we are connected with every single person who ever has or ever will experience a similar loss. Life and loss are born with us each. We know grief, yet we shun it and shun those around us whose grief is too painful for us to share. Rumi says, "Be that searching for water." What would it be like to be lost, searching for grief? So that too is my goal today, to imagine that all of the losses running around in life might find through us their best, most transformative home in grief. Thing is, we are all losers, all of the time. Life is about chronic loss. Losses large and losses small. Now that is not all life is about, but we can't know the rest of what life is most deeply about if we don't first take on the mantle of loser. We Americans are not so good at that. Yet isn't it the truth that grief is born with us as we lose union with our birth mother at the moment of our birth? Grief is intrinsic to life. We come into the world needing to figure out who we are now that we have lost that floaty, nourishing environment within someone else's body. And that is the work of grief, to figure out who we are now that we have lost. Now that we have lost, you could fill in the blank. Now that we have lost our wallet. Now that we have lost our ability to walk, now that we have lost our bearings, now that we have lost our job, now that we have lost our best friend in a move, now that we have lost our faith, now that we have lost the way we thought things were going to be. Who am I now that I have lost? That's the question that loss asks through grief. But loss needs to find its home through us in grief, in the grieving process, in the deliberate and conscious making of soup, tear soup, letting it simmer long enough with patience and acceptance so that in the end it tastes mighty fine. So that's the other thing about life, which is chronic loss. When loss has a home in grief, life is chronic with human hearts that can hold more and more love and feel more and more joy. So I had a dream about Peter Pan this week. The Peter Pan in the James Berry classic who, the dream I had, was starting to lose his oomph as a man-child, and was sewing his shadow to his feet. Do you remember that in Peter Pan? Once he then incorporated his shadow, the darker side of life, into his youthful joie de vivre, he came back to life in a way, but it seemed to me a bit more subdued, less falsely optimistic. You could say he had grown up by giving the loss of his youth a home in grief, in recognizing that the pain, what we might call the darker experiences of life and loss, is that which carves out, ultimately, our ability to savor life and be present for the not painful. My mother, Donna, died in November, as most of you know. She had lived with us for 5 years and died of end-stage Alzheimer's disease. The idea that I and my family would spend 5 years caring for her was a loss of what I thought life would be in those 5 years. And then witnessing the day-to-day loss of this intelligent, charming mother I knew was a process that I did not want to participate in. I don't stand before you today saying that I did this any better than anyone else. Ministers sometimes say we do this well because we deal with so much grief with people, but I think we're all masters at experiencing loss and can become masters at making great tear soup. I do, however, want to share with you that the most useful piece of advice I got along the way was from a neighbor of mine who's quite elderly, who I rarely talk to, but seeing her on the street one day on the sidewalk took me by the shoulders and said, "Embrace it. Embrace it. Embrace the grief I felt. Acknowledge the harshness. Weep the tears. Forgive myself. Honor those who were my companions on the way. Forgive myself. Again, weep more tears. Write my angst. Rely on others. Fully acknowledge the largeness of this reality. Let grief be the home for my losses." And even as I did that imperfectly, bit by bit, I began to know who I was other than someone bearing the burden of loss. The words grieve and grief come from a French word meaning to bear a heavy burden. When we grieve with someone or grieve for ourselves, we bear the burden of sorrow. It is as if we carry our grief like a pregnancy to term. That if we do this, if we take the time to let loss be expressed in grief, something is born from it. And that act of birth, in the fullness of time, heals and makes us whole again. As for crying, anybody who knows me well knows that I'm an advocate of it and am chagrined and sad when people hold their crying in even as they're attending a funeral for their most beloved family member. This is what we have learned in this culture, and yet tears are meant to be the prayer beads for all of us, men and women, because they arise from a fullness of the heart. Someone wrote, "The cloud weeps, and then the garden sprouts. The baby cries and the mother's milk flows. The nurse of creation has said, let them cry a lot." And this from Rumi. "This rain weeping and sun burning twine together to make us grow. Keep your intelligence white hot and your grieving glistening, so your life will stay fresh. Cry easily, like a little child." Loss wanders around inside of us, gets expressed in ways we'd rather not, if it doesn't find a home in grief, if it doesn't simmer into a delicious soup that we intentionally make, a soup upon eating that allows us to love even more deeply afterward. I've always admired the tradition of sitting Shiva in Judaism, where it is ritualized that people will stay in their homes for a week and be visited, acknowledging that this is the beginning, this is the beginning. beginning of their making of tear soup. I don't know if the words are related, but I think then in Hinduism of Lord Shiva, who represented life's essential duality, the cycle of birth and death, creation and destruction, one following the other, an endless dance. We are all losers. The sooner we realize this, the sooner we will begin learning how to make tear soup. And listen, how you make your soup does not have to be the same way I make my soup. The fact that I came to services on Sunday morning after my mother died the Saturday night before was my way of beginning to make my tear soup. It worked for me. Listening to ourselves and finding our own way might require us to be downright counterculture. But any one person's soup will be less tasty if the fear of bothering people or not appearing strong or forcing oneself to be on someone else's timetable or believing that if you are still grieving after a year, there's something wrong. The grief we each meet and carry in the moment of loss, no matter what the loss is, has its own integrity that ought not be compromised by judgment, comparison, or even the need for anyone else to understand. It is what it is for that person. What it will become is a function of the condition of the soil in which it will be planted. There's a lot of talk in grieving that when we're done grieving, we have let go of the person or the thing that we're grieving. But the concept I most love is that we don't actually let go of that person. We make a choice in our making of the soup, in our grieving, what we will continue to carry forward and that which we will leave behind. And in that way, immortality is achieved through what we choose to continue on of that person in our own lives. So in my own process now, and I've had many such losses in my life, you live long enough and that's the case, isn't it? So I watched Still Alice the other night, which is a book I read, and it's a movie about that book about a woman with early onset Alzheimer's. And at the end, I cried, I wept tears. And I think because I was thinking about this sermon, I just let it be, and it felt so good. It felt so whole and so right and such a tribute to love. And we are so afraid of that pain. I'll speak for myself. I can be afraid of that kind of pain. The idea that once we start, we will never stop is usually not the case. Sometimes people cry little droplets for many years, and sometimes people go to the wailing wall and get most of it out in one session. Each of us has our own recipe. I was remembering a line or a scene in the children's classic Paddington Bear where Paddington is in need of assistance, and he calls out like this, "Help, I need help." Not wanting to disturb anyone with his need. And someone wrote, "Call out, disturb the silence with your soul's cry, your pain, your loss. Your grief ought to disturb the world with its loveliness." A loss that finds a home in grief can be healed. And healing doesn't happen to us. It happens because of us, and loss happens, and grief is for us. Hidden in the shadow of loss is the power of the love we have for that which is lost. The question is not why me, the question is why. What can we make of it? Who are we now? These are the deep spiritual questions that loss can bring to us if it makes its home in grief. We are losers and vulnerable together because of it. And transformation does not come when there is a pretense of perfection and impenetrable righteousness or strength. Transformation comes through the cracks in the armor of perfection. Vulnerability is the teacher of the basic unity of life. And we need people, we need leaders in our Congress and in our Senate who make themselves vulnerable enough to receive the wisdom that such human vulnerability teaches. We evolved from sea water, and in my soup, there's some of it. Salty beginnings. We grow in the watery, salty dark of the womb and cry salty tears to announce our new life. Allowing our tears to guide us, we begin to learn a certain softness, a certain tenderness at the heart of things that connect us. When we allow our own expressed grief and suffering to heal us, we begin to know that what breaks open in the process is the covering of our soul. It helps us to know that what is opened by the break is the place where mystery flows in and where love is known most clearly. And then when the soup is just perfect, you taste it one day and it's sweet. We know then that a portion of all the love that ever was resides within us, allowing our tears to teach us this. We then know the soft strength of compassion and unity. And this is that which will save the world. And I'll end with this little reading by Galway Kinnell, one of my favorite poets. Crying only a little bit is no use. You must cry until your pillow is soaked. Then you can get up and laugh. Then you can jump in the shower and splash, splash, splash. Then you throw open your window and ha, ha, ha. And if anybody says, hey, what's going on up there? Ha, ha, sing back. Happiness was hiding in my last tear, and I wept it. Rise now and we'll sing together. 301. Touch the earth, reach the sky.